Hudson Chocolates are exceptional chocolates and confections crafted and designed by exceptional people. More importantly, and more, you know, specifically, they are designed by master chocolatier Francesco Magoia. Poughkeepsie, New York's newest chocolate shop opened its doors to the public in March 23rd to be exact. Francesco was named one of the top 10 pastry chefs in America by Dessert Professional magazine. My subscription has lapsed on that publication, I am afraid to say, in 2011, and the Huffington Post in 2013. He's also served as the executive pastry chef at Thomas Keller's Michelin three-star restaurant, the French Laundry, as well as the Bouchon Bakery and Bouchon Bistro. He joins us now to tell us more about this confectionery adventure that he has undertaken in Poughkeepsie. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Great. Well, I hope you're hungry because there's a lot of chocolate you're going to have to eat.
We should tell people that you brought a lot of... You have a lot of chocolate pies in front of you. And, I don't know what I'm in for here as far as what your expectations are. But let me just ask you. So, at what point in your life did you say, "I think chocolate should be something fun to work with"?
Well, it's always been part of the repertoire that, as a pastry chef, we have. There's different things that we do. You know, you make ice creams, plate desserts, and so on. And chocolate's always is a part of that. But chocolate has been, the focus recently with this company. But since I started basically working professionally, I would say chocolate has been an integral part for the last 13 years or so of my career. So it's just there's so much potential untapped in chocolate yet, and that's what we're trying to do here is we're trying to make this happen.
What's untapped?
Basically, I mean, one of the things that we were thinking about when we were thinking about this project, which was, I would say, 3 years ago since we started thinking about this, was that there's a lot of potential in chocolate with regards to flavor combinations and with regards to what it should look like and how it should be eaten and how it should be displayed and different techniques and methods that are rather complicated that we fully embrace and that we try to execute with the quality that we're trying to produce. So it's not that we have these crazy flavor combinations, but there's things that haven't been done before that we do that I think work very well with chocolate.
Give us an example.
Well, one of the items, and I brought you some here to take a look at, is we have these, for example, we have these candied olives that are... They're Niçoise olives, and basically we blanch them, so we get rid of a bunch of that briny taste from it. But we blanch them, and then we candy them in a sugar syrup, and then we dry them, so they're like salty raisins, in a sense.
Okay.
And then we coat those with white chocolate. And that combination of salty, briny, and sweet is just extraordinary. I mean, it's made people that don't like olives, they go, "I like olives now."
If you put chocolate on it.
Right. Exactly.
Add bacon or chocolate to pretty much anything. I think you've got got a winner. Do you consider a white chocolate chocolate?
It's not chocolate. Technically, it's not chocolate.
Yeah.
But, I mean, technically it should be called a couverture, but people identify it more as white chocolate.
They understand. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And know what they're in for when you call it that.
Right.
So where is that?
We have that in here.
Okay.
Inside this box.
in the trove. We'll try those.
Right.
And so at what point do you say, maybe olives?
You know, it was the idea came from, it was inspired by a chef in the United Kingdom. His name is Heston Blumenthal. He has a restaurant called The Fat Duck. And one of the, right, it's a great name. Huh?
I love that. The Fat Duck.
He had a flavor combination that was caviar and white chocolate. And the first impression that most people would get is like, that cannot go well together. But the way he explains it is that there's many similar chemical compounds in caviar and white chocolate that are similar and that align them in a way that in flavor they also work well together. So I obviously wasn't going to put caviar in my chocolate. So I was thinking of what is it that we could utilize in a format that would make sense for us. And that salty, savory kind of style of things, we found that olives and white chocolate work really well.
First of all, that's stupendous. That is amazing. Now, the question I would ask about this is, or the comment I would make, Okay, I'll ask it as a question. It seems to me very difficult to be able to do what you've done here, which is you take a strong flavor of an olive and to still stay true to that flavor and yet add the chocolate. Everything here is equal. You get to taste the chocolate. You get to taste the there is that sugar, and you get to taste the olive itself, and that's a lovely combination.
It works well. We like to utilize that the salt and the chocolate together, not just in that bar, but we have other chocolates that we utilize that in a way that makes sense with chocolate.
That's like a love chocolate covered pretzels for just that reason.
There you go. I think salt brings out the best in chocolate. It just enhances those nuances and it just rounds it out really nicely.
I'm an olive lover, so that tastes like an olive to me, and yet it is still has that confectionery
right
pop.
You know, it's a candy, if you will.
Yeah, that's lovely. All right. So we talk about this, or at least I talk about this, of ice cream a lot of times, that when you go to places and there's all kinds of different ice creams, and when you want to test what kind of ice cream a particular place makes, you try their vanilla.
Yes.
And see what the base is, and is that good? And if that's good, you can go on. For you, is it milk chocolate or dark chocolate?
I think that dark chocolate is the king of chocolates. I mean that is the pinnacle of what chocolate is, and that's why the chocolate that we utilize is the highest quality in my opinion that we utilize. But doesn't mean that milk chocolate is too far behind because there's white chocolate is even harder to get to show what chocolate is about because it's behind a lot of sugar. It's behind a lot of milk.
Yeah.
So when you get a really good milk chocolate, I wouldn't say that it's better than dark chocolate, but it really is important to get that particularity of chocolate from it.
So reading into what you just said, I can tell from the dark chocolate the quality of the chocolate itself.
Yes.
And then from the milk chocolate, mm-hmm. I can tell what you have done with it as a craftsman.
Yes. And, you know, in a sense, a lot of the chocolates that we make, the shell or the outside is dark chocolate.
Okay.
And the inside will typically be made, it's called a ganache or chocolate cream.
Right.
We utilize mostly milk chocolate for that because you can combine a lot of flavors. Flavors go through more clearly with milk chocolate than they do with dark. So if I'm trying to infuse like lemon zest or I'm trying to infuse ginger into cream and then mix it into chocolate, it'll resound more. It'll be clear when it's combined with something not as strong as dark chocolate.
For you as the creator,
mm-hmm.
how do you envision us eating it?
That is a very good question because, I mean, for me, all of these pieces are what I call moments of bliss. What I like to do is all of these pieces are meant to be shared. They're meant to be had as, you know, a group of people that get together and can cut into
about.
It and talk about it. And that's a very important part too, because on our website, you can see a lot of the products that we make. I didn't bring them all because they wouldn't fit on this table. But but a lot of the pieces that we do are meant to be centerpieces and for people to, you know, at the end of the dinner, you know, you sit around and you look at it and you taste it and you're talking about it. And it's something that engages the person or the people that are eating it. So it's a social thing. It's enjoying these moments with a group of people and, you know, having that moment to yourself as well.
You have lovely packaging. It has orange and gray, and it's with string. The whole presentation is very nice, which adds a lot to that, right? So if we were to open this up.
Yes.
And then.
Let me show you what we have in here.
Okay.
This is our box of truffles. We have four different truffles here. This is our all-day truffle box. We call it an all-day truffle box because we have...
we haven't hit our newsroom.
This is an espresso truffle.
22-minute truffle box. Yes, go ahead.
There you go. We should call it that. This is our espresso truffle, and this is a donut truffle. So this is made with actual donuts. So you start your day right with, you know, coffee and donuts.
Absolutely.
Right? And as you, you know, you go through your day, you get home, then we have a brandy truffle here. It's this is a brandy truffle, and this is a really interesting truffle. This is a tobacco truffle.
Now, this has a little bit of a sachet.
Yes. Each is individually wrapped. And the thing is that we don't actually introduce tobacco into the – you're not eating tobacco ever. Tobacco is more of an aroma than a flavor.
Okay.
So what we do is we have this little sachet that inside it has a little small amount of type of tobacco that's called Black Cavendish tobacco. And here you can take a smell of that. This is a – tobacco that is typically used for smoking pipe, but it goes through a really thorough process of fermentation that actually brings out that aroma that you smell. That is completely natural. It's sweet. It's like raisins and brandy is what it smells like to me. So what we do is then...
But you don't eat that.
You don't eat that. No,
okay.
No.
All right.
Unless you're into chewing tobacco.
No. That's what, but so then it has a little bit of...
It has this linen that surrounds the actual truffle to protect
it. So you get it within the same vicinity.
Right. So what it's doing in the tobacco
is... It's as it were.
Exactly. The tobacco is basically scenting or contributing its aroma to the truffle. So if you smell it smells like the tobacco, but you're never actually eating tobacco.
Okay. And then... All right.
The truffle itself is a caramel truffle. So what you're getting is the aroma of the tobacco. And we used Black Cavendish because we didn't want to use like a cigar tobacco or something that would be harsh.
Yeah.
So
that's lovely.
Thank you.
That's really nice.
And it's creamy, and so it gets you through the day.
How much of it is olfactory?
A lot is olfactory. Flavor perception is 80% aroma. And 20% taste.
So we're tasting the caramel, we're tasting the chocolate, but that tobacco is mostly. I mean, obviously there's some residual, but we're smelling that mostly.
We're smelling it, yes. And so that was the important part of this. And this is something that
because when I smell the, I'm sorry, when I smell the piece itself, the chocolate, I don't pick up that flavor as when I taste it.
Exactly, because it's in your mouth, and what you're getting is what is called retronasal aroma perception, which is in the back. It's not in the front of your nose, it's the back of your nose, so that's even stronger than the front of your nose.
Yeah. I assume in none of the literature do you use the term retronasal.
No, it's not a very appetizing term, I suppose, to define.
It's a great term,
but
I can see. That's lovely. That's really nice. So how do you make chocolate with donuts?
We actually use cake donuts. We use cake donuts which have more of a, we tried to use brioche donuts or like yeast risen donuts, and the flavor didn't really feel like it was donut. I didn't get donuts. So what we use is cake donuts, and we basically cook them with cream, cinnamon, sugar. We make a puree out of it, and then we mix it with milk chocolate. And so what you get there is just that's the essence or the soul of a donut, if you will, in a truffle form. We've developed a formula to be able to do this with many things. We do one with sourdough, we can do it with baguette and such, but with donuts it works really nicely too.
When you say we develop this and we do this, some of this, and I don't know whether you accept this term or not, but it seems like a little bit of play, you know, like you're playing around, you know, experimentation certainly would be a word.
And, you know, there's a lot of failures too. I mean, there's a lot of testing that you do that you think is going to work and it's not, you know. Case in point was the truffle, the tobacco truffle. We at first like tried to infuse tobacco into the actual, in the cream, and it was disgusting. It was like, it was terrible. And
there's kind of a fine line, isn't there, between being creative and...
Right. Yeah, you know. Because it might work up here in your head, but once you execute it, but that's the pleasure of it, I suppose.
We're just about out of time, but what I find curious about the tobacco truffle, for example, is that if I were just to put this out at the house during a dinner party, you would have to explain to the person what it is. And that's part of the process.
It's part of the process. And it's also important to have a conversation about it. And it's, I think that it's important to really, this is not a box of chocolates that you're just going to drop off. This is a box of chocolates that has conversation attached to it. So.
Yeah. And then how much, because it's experimentation for us as the consumer.
Right.
And, and there's trust in you as the chocolatier,
right.
And you think, oh, well, you know, at however much a pound, you know, I want to make sure I like what I'm eating, because we've all had that experience where you're like, oh, really? Lilac? okay.
Right.
And you know, you spit it out and you try to give it to the dog. And
right.
They roll in it. But this is something where if you have that trust and saying, all right, if I'm dealing with, to me, right. If you're dealing with chocolate, donut, and brandy, you're probably going to be okay.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, and I think that, you know, people that.
What could go wrong?
There's people that have that willingness and that they do place their trust in our hands. And you know, for example, we have, you know, people that have to believe in the product in order to feel that, you know, they're going to get their money's worth. And part of it was, you know, for example, you know, when we were first starting up, you know, trying to sell this to investors, one of the people that believed in us was Sean Eldridge from Hudson River Ventures, and he got it. We did the interview. I brought him an even larger stack of chocolates. And, you know, it was like this, I can't argue with this.
Note to self, more chocolate, right. Have to be an investor.
Exactly. So.
Okay, yeah. Well, I wish you nothing but the best of luck. I know you've been up and running since March and
yes.
Have made quite the splash. This is beautiful, beautiful stuff. And talking about your craft with us this morning, I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I wish you all the luck in the world. Thank you so much. Folks can find out more information by checking you out. You can go, they're right at 211 Cottage Street in Poughkeepsie, and you also have workshop hours, and you can find out. And you can find out more by going to hudsonchocolates.com. Francisco Magoya, I thank you very much again for being with us. It's a delight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Us.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.